life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.
Thanks for listening. I'm Brian Smith, the man who was constructed from the DNA of the world's most evil podcasters. And this is episode 12 of Dynamite in the Brain, the podcast that loves anime and hates fun. Joining me once again is enemy weapons supplier and DEFCON2.co.uk scribe Anthony Askew. And we welcome back for the second part of this Marvel Japanese production rundown. It's the mute ninja, Gary Hedges.
Hi, guys.
Sorry, I was doing the mute thing for a second.
All right, you did, it was a good job. You did a good job. So where are we up to? We did a lot last episode.
Yes, we finished off Muppet Babies, and we're still in 1984. The next show is My Little Pony.
Oh, what a way to start.
It was like the initial specials were just the Toei production, and then the series and films were... Some were Toei, and some were South Korea's Acom. I've not seen any My Little Pony ever.
Ditto. I've seen the toys.
Tragically, I've seen a fair bit of the TV show.
Is this your sister's fault again?
Yeah, my sister's fault again. She was huge into My Little Pony. It was, and in, the cartoon ran on TV. It was kind of like, I think it was a Saturday morning job, so you'd kind of, I'd be sitting there watching whatever it was I was watching, Transformers or whatever, My Little Pony would come on and I would tolerate it to keep my sister happy, and then because I wanted to get to the next cartoon that'd be something I liked.
Oh, so, yeah, that's very nice of you.
It was kind of... I don't remember much about the story of it. It was kind of the ponies got into adventures, and I think there were villains in it, but I don't think there was ever any villain toys, but it was kind of weird. I know some of them had wings and could fly, and that was a new thing. I remember my sister going mad over the toys that had wings.
Why was she a hardcore?
Oh, she had all the toys. She had the great big house thing, like the parlor or whatever it was. And yeah, she was very hugely into My Little Pony. I think most girls were around that time.
Yeah, girls love ponies.
Exactly.
So
stating the obvious there.
Yeah. Boys might love ponies as well, but.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Have you either of you seen any of the new series, which is just started, I think, last year. That's all.
No, I've heard a lot about it. Raving about it. What's it actually called? It's got an unusual name, hasn't it?
Is it My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, I think?
That's
something bizarre.
Is it? It looks like it's got a kind of Cartoon Network-y look to it.
Yeah, it's, I think it's staff who worked on Powerpuff Girls are behind it. So it's got a much more cartoony. Yeah, My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. And it airs on... Yeah, because Hasbro... Well, this is another Hasbro show from 1984. In America, Hasbro have gone one step further now. And they just have their own TV channel.
Which really?
Last year. Yeah, in October last year, they launched this show called The Hub, which replaced Discovery Kids in America. And so, yeah... Why put your TV shows advertising toys on other stations and just put them straight onto your own TV station?
24/7 advert.
Yeah.
So this is one of their first developed specifically for this TV station. Apparently the problem is, though, is that it appeals too much to teenagers and young adults and not enough to kids who actually want to buy the toys. There's been news articles in the past week about that, sort of saying how Hasbro have really got to learn how to cash in on that interest rather than sort of either cancel it.
Yeah, they'd be better off bringing out things like T-shirts and stuff that people of that sort of age group would buy, so.
But yeah, I'm not seeing it yet. I didn't get a chance to check an episode out before we started, but I may well do. I hear lots of good things about it.
Of the new My Little Pony?
The new one, yeah. I'm not in a rush to check out the old one.
I heard it kind of started and then it kind of blew up on the internet. And
yeah.
The internet kind of went wild for it. And
from what I hear, the first two, like the pilot episodes were like closer in sort of being semi-serious.
Yeah.
Like the original one was. And then after that, it tends to be a lot more gags.
I've seen a few clips on YouTube and I'd possibly something I might watch if I'm very bored, but I don't know.
But yeah, obviously that was decent though. That was another Hasbro one. So obviously it was again like Transformers. It was designed to sell you as many of these little ponies as possible. And I remember going to buy when I went to buy that Insecticon I mentioned in the last episode. That the other two big things at the time would have been My Little Pony and Care Bears toys.
Yeah, they were pretty huge.
And very similar, of course. But Care Bears and My Little Pony have both got that sort of... They were plastic bodies and then sort of like... the hair would be sort of that sort of doll's hair type.
Oh, I hate the feel of that. Ugh. Horrible. It's horrible.
Okay, yeah, moving on.
Girls loved it because they could comb it with little combs.
Put little clips
in it and...
Oh, it feels awful. It's got a horrible thing. Synthetic feel to it. It's awful.
So really, to kill two birds with one stone, they should have just made hairy Transformers.
Yeah, could you imagine Optimus Prime with a beard? A free beard trimmer in the packet.
That'd be fantastic.
Prime's beard before battle.
Okay, next up is... another toy show, which not as successful as Transformers or My Little Pony, which is Robotics from 1985. I never saw this cartoon, but I did read the comic. I think it ran in the back of Marvel UK's Transformers at some point.
And I don't know much about it. Short episodes.
Yeah, and they're kind of like, the toys were like... you could take them apart and put them together in different ways.
Mm.
And from what I was reading, it suffered from the same problem James Will Warriors has.
Yeah.
Where the toys were too generic to make a cartoon of. So when you bought the toys, you didn't have any of the characters who were in the cartoon to play with.
Poor Robotics fans, haven't they?
I suspect there aren't many. Maybe.
Probably not.
I was just going to say, yeah, kind of looking at Robotics, it's kind of, it just looks like a cheap version of GoBots, which was a cheap version of Transformers.
Yeah, it looks pretty pants. But it is only 15 6-minute short episodes.
Yes, so maybe they didn't have much faith in it to begin with. One thing but they did have faith in this other show they launched in 1985. And that would be G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero. Or, as it was known in the UK, Action Force.
Yeah.
Now, Action Force was G.I. Joe internationalised. It was interesting when people were complaining about how they internationalised the G.I. Joe movie, so, sort of making them an international force rather than real American heroes, when they'd actually done that already. I suspect probably everywhere else they sold G.I. Joe in the 80s. Because they even changed all the nationalities, I think, of a lot of the Action Force characters. Because you'd like get like a little, on the back of the cards the characters came on, you got like a little file you cut out to keep like secret files of all the characters. And I think they changed the nationalities of a lot of them, because I think they were all American originally, at least all the G.I. Joe characters were.
Yeah.
I think they made them international for Action Force. But there was an Action Force toy before G.I. Joe became Action Force, which I think Gary was interested in knowing. Why it was called Action Force rather than G.I. Joe or rather than something else.
Yeah, I just remember because I remember being, as a kid, somehow being aware that Action Force was G.I. Joe and vice versa. I mean, was it still called G.I. Joe in comic form or was it also called Action Force?
It was also called Action Force, yeah. There was, the first Action Force toys were by Palitoy, not Hasbro. And they were a spin-off of Action Man.
Oh, right.
And that's where the name came from, presumably?
Yes, yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so they were kind of... I think they started off sort of just being generically military like Action Man was. And then later on, you started getting this sort of mythology come in. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page now, and it says 1983, the second generation toys... tied in with a comic called Battle Action Force. There was a comic called Battle, and then that became Battle Action Force as part of it was included, which came from Fleetway, the people who did 2000 AD and The Eagle. And part of the comic was dedicated to Action Force. And so you had all these different forces, which were Z-Force, SAS Force, Q-Force, Space Force, and they fought bad guys called the Red Shadows, who were led by a man in a sort of a looked like he got a dustbin on his head called Baron and Blood. And there is a great website called Blood for the Baron, which sort of documents this comic. Well, maybe the toys as well, but definitely the comic. In fact, they've got loads of scans of the comic there as well. And Hasbro picked up the name Action Force and used off Palette Toy and used that to brand the G.I. Joe toys when they released them in the UK. And then before it became a Marvel comic, the Fleetway comic briefly sort of merged into the Hasbro toys. So you started getting Cobra show up and all the Action Force characters or G.I. Joe characters show up.
Yeah.
And then eventually it moved to Marvel, who were originally reprinting the G.I. Joe comic book with changing the names to Action Force where applicable. And then you started getting actual British comics written to fill in the gaps, including from people like Grant Morrison, famous Scottish comic writer, would be one of his early works would be on Action Force. As well,
that name rings a bell, and I can't think where.
Who, Grant Morrison?
Grant Morrison, yeah.
He should do. He's a pretty big name in there. He wrote comics, yes. Zenith, 2000 AD, Animal Man, Doom Patrol.
Oh, Batman.
He writes RIP, Batman at the moment. Yeah, Batman RIP.
I've got that.
Batman Inc. at the moment.
Right. For some reason, when he said Grant Morrison, I was thinking of Grant M., a certain con goer. And I thought you were kind of making a little in joke. But
more like a con not goer. With a
oh, that's really
I think what made me think to get the link between Action Force and G.I. Joe is it was probably the case where they were importing toys from the States, so you would have certain toys in the shops that would actually have the G.I. Joe branding on them.
Yeah.
I think might have been where we got the kind of the link between, because it was kind of obviously the logo was identical. It just had the same three stripes on it and all the rest of it. And the toys were identical, just the packaging said G.I. Joe rather than Action Force.
Yeah, so while we had the comic and while we had the toys, I don't know if the TV show ever really appeared on TV. Because my first introduction to the cartoon was my brother buying, or probably getting it for a present more like, I think it was a special, or maybe it'd been a bunch of episodes stuck together called Arise, Serpentor, Arise. Which was about the bad guy's Cobra creating a new leader who was created from they went and raided the tombs of history's most evil men and then used their DNA to create their new leader.
Sounds pretty badass.
Because they were fed up with Cobra Commander being useless.
Who was in these tombs? Hitler or?
I don't think they went for Hitler. I think that might have been a little bit. Napoleon, I think, was one of them. Genghis Khan.
That's awesome.
I can't remember who else. But yeah, that was I think the first time I saw the animation.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did have a lot of the toys. Because I think they were fairly cheap. At least the action figures were. Compared to, say, a Transformer.
Mm. See, I don't know enough of the G.I. Joe names of the characters to pick a favourite, to be honest.
Snake Eyes is my favourite.
Is that the ninja?
That's the mute ninja, yes, the mute ninja commando.
Snake Eyes was damn awesome. Oh, you got to get a special mention for Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh, yes, special mention for Sergeant Slaughter, who was a wrestler who, again, I could never work out. I think he licensed his likeness to them, and then he also did the voices for his character in the cartoon. But in the UK Action Force version, he was Sergeant Slammer. And I don't know whether that was censorship or just sort of some sort of delay in release meant that he'd moved to WWE or something or WWF instead. And maybe they couldn't use the Sergeant Slaughter name anymore.
Sergeant Slammer.
But yeah, so you get the dub of this and G.I. Joe, because I think he showed up in Arise, Serpentor, Arise, but he definitely shows up in G.I. Joe the movie.
Yeah.
Action Force, the movie that was over here, where he's a big part of it because he's training this team of sort of new recruits for Action Force. and they're sort of the main characters, and he's leading them. And sometimes he'd be Sergeant Slammer. I think once they occasionally he's still Sergeant Slaughter, and then I think once he's Sergeant Slam Slaughter, because they haven't quite ADR'd it properly. And I think occasionally they'd slip that a Gojo would get missed instead of full force as it was in.
Oh, is that what they said? Yeah. Full force. Ugh,
yes.
Terrible.
It's not quite as good as
Gojo. No, I don't really, as I said, I don't have a favourite, but whoever's got the best mustache, I think. Gung Ho.
It's that Gung Ho, I think. Gung Ho, I think he's the guy with Gung-ho. The mustache.
I don't know. I had a couple of favourites. Duke was classic. And Snake Eyes is pretty good, but I like Storm Shadow, who was like Snake Eyes' nemesis in Cobra.
I take it from that laugh you just looked at what Gung Ho looks like.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go Storm Shadow because I don't know. I thought the Cobra villains had the funkier outfits.
Hmm.
And Destro looked pretty awesome.
And he was Scottish, supposedly, but I'm not sure you could tell from his voice in the cartoon.
No, you found that out when you watched the live-action film, though.
Ah, I kept that bit. Yeah.
According to these images I'm looking at, there's a few incarnations of Gung-Ho. There's one where he's like a sailor. Is that correct? Or is that...
Oh, I think that's somebody else. That might be...
Oh, cause I do like the look of him. He's got a full-on beard.
Yeah, that's somebody else. That is... what's that guy called?
Shipwreck.
Yes, yeah,
you're right.
As, yeah.
You are right, there are so many of them. And there's a guy called Snowjob as well.
Snowjob.
Oh, I don't know whether I want to Google that.
I must admit, G.I. Joe's actually did have some pretty decent names. You'd think between G.I. Joe and Transformers, they'd have run out of, like, catchphrase-y sort of names for characters, but...
I'm going to say Shipwreck's by far my favourite now. Definitely.
Yeah, did he come with a parrot? I think he did.
Yeah,
he did.
One of the pictures.
He had a little parrot.
He has an old, like, pirate-style gun, by the looks of things, like a flintlock pistol with a laser sight on the top.
Yeah, again, like Transformers, this was the one where you watched the cartoon, you got the adverts, for the comic. The comic also advertised the cartoon and the toys. Yeah, so it completely fed itself round and around and again and again.
Oh, and let's not forget the all-important public safety announcements that you got at the end.
Oh, yeah, they were briefly like a internet meme,
I've seen the videos, yeah.
Yes.
But I read something about this. One of the, I don't know whether it was but now you know annoying is half the battle. What's that got to do with the series?
I think knowing is half the battle was their catchphrase for their public service messages at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it'd be like, you'd see like, the funny thing was you'd also get it in Transformers. Because it was probably the same teams that were doing the two, maybe not.
I think they shared some script writers and stuff.
Because you would even have Transformers using the exact same catchphrase, like, there'd be a kid like on a boat and he wouldn't be wearing a life jacket and he'd fall overboard. And then he'd get saved by either one of the Transformers or somebody from G.I. Joe. They were like, yeah, you should always wear a life jacket when you go on a boat, and the kid would be like, thanks, now I know. And then the G.I. Joe or Transformer would say, yes, and knowing is half the battle. And that was kind of the tagline for all those public service announcements. But yeah, they did it in Transformers as well, which was kind of weird, because I remember when I first heard it, thinking, that's a G.I. Joe catchphrase, why is Bumblebee saying that? I think the Bumblebee one was quite... The Bumblebee one was quite funny, because it was basically two kids that were trying to steal a car, but the car they were trying to steal was Bumblebee. He just transforms in front of them and starts giving them a lecture on why car crime is wrong.
And now the new...
Yeah, those public service announcements were awesome.
Yeah,
and the spoofs were pretty good.
Yeah, and in the UK comic... Well, maybe in the American comics as well, but definitely in the UK comics, they did do a crossover with Action Force and Transformers where they met each other.
Yeah, I think I've seen T-shirts and posters in Forbidden Planet of the Decepticon logo, but with the Cobra snake... kind of encircling it, because presumably they teamed up at some point.
Yeah, quite likely. Anything else I wanted to mention about? Yeah, G.I. Joe the movie was the other thing I saw, which has many, many quotable lines. And had the Something Strange situation where, as I mentioned before, I just told you one origin for Serpentor. Well, apparently they didn't like that, and so they give him another origin in G.I. Joe the movie. And you get this really, and also a bizarre origin for Cobra Commander. Yeah. I think that's a bit like Transformers the movie, and they get loads of guest stars, but they're not quite as high wattage as Transformers was. So you've not got Orson Welles. I think you've got, if I remember correctly, you've got Don Johnson. He's hot off his Miami Vice fame.
Oh, right.
I was going to see if there's anybody else I remember. But,
Joe. Go, Joe! Shipwreck, what a name.
Goodness. I thought it was Don Johnson, but he didn't seem to be on the cast list. Oh, there we go. Yeah, he was Lieutenant Falcon in this. Oh, I can't remember if he was an old character or a new character. In fact, he can't... So you got Don Johnson, Sergeant Slaughter. Is there anybody else of note in that cast list?
That's all you need, really.
Burgess Meredith was the villain.
Goodness.
Globulus, he was the villain. That seems like he should be somebody. But it's not. Okay, yeah, so obviously they couldn't quite afford the massive amount of wages on their famous celebrities for that show.
No.
But, yeah, some of my favourite lines here is there's a man who has a character called Law and Order, who's like this cop and his police dog. Hey, Law and Order's a team, man. He finds the bombs, I drive the car. We tried it the other way, but it didn't work. and another one of the recruits is a basketball player. He's a basketball-playing soldier. He's called Big Lob.
Is he black?
I believe he may well be, yes.
Good. Because white men can't jump, as everyone knows. So.
That is correct.
Oh.
Right, next on, I got on this list, there's a show called Young Astronauts, which is a pilot, which I have no information about whatsoever.
I've got a little bit I found on this.
Fire away.
It's only a rumour, but I believe the reason it didn't continue to air after the pilot, not because it was crap, which may well have been the case, but also linked to the Challenger disaster.
Ah, yeah, I was just thinking.
The thought it was kind of a bit too soon.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's only a rumour though, but it sounds feasible. So, you never know, it may hit the TV again one year. get re-released, but no, it's all I know.
And knowing is half the battle.
It is.
Also in 1986 was a show I forgot to put on the list I originally sent you two guys. Inhumanoids.
Inhumanoids sounds familiar.
Yeah, the comic again appeared in the back of the Transformers comic. I know that's the only way I'm familiar with it. And it was like loads of weird monsters was the gimmick of the toy line and the show. Let me see what it says here. Yeah, this sounds like what they wanted robotics to be. It started as a slate of 6 to 7 minute shorts.
I'm looking at pictures of it now, and it kind of looks like something straight out of Guyver.
In fact, when Guyver came along, I thought Guyver was
Inhumanoids.
Yes.
Yeah.
When I first saw Guyver, is exactly what I thought as well. In fact, it took me a lot of convincing that there wasn't any connection between them.
Well, what kind of show was this? Obviously a kid's show, but it looks pretty gruesome.
Yes, I think.
Scary and for a child.
Yeah, there's a villain called Decompose, who's like this undead creature who...
Is that the guy with his rib cage on the outside of his body?
Yes, he traps people in their rib cages.
That's awful.
There's Tendril, who's a massive... Yeah, he's like seaweed and a mollusk. He's like an H.P. Lovecraft type creature.
Oh, I can see it, yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, looking at Cthulhu, one of the intros, a comment on there says Cthulhu for kids.
Yeah, it pretty much is, yeah, because they like going underground and finding this secret world of monsters. Mm. Some are good.
I see some sort of rock lord in there.
Yeah, I think those are the good guys, aren't they? I think there's some
I don't really know, but
I think there were some good guide monsters. But yeah, the comics seemed fairly horrific when I was reading them as a kid, so I really liked them. Kind of wish there was more of them. But yeah, I made the same Guyver connection, and when there isn't one.
That's a shame.
The toys apparently were, the monster toys were huge, like 14 inches tall or something.
Jesus.
Oh wow.
Well,
yeah,
never saw any humanoids on TV, but it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it might have got video release or something, or maybe it was just ran on some obscure satellite channel.
Did it run for long? A lot of episodes?
No, it's got 13 episodes according to Wikipedia, so it was another done and one, didn't catch on. Perhaps because the toys were maybe too expensive.
Yeah, sounds like a 14-inch. Yeah.
I definitely didn't see the toys over here. That's for sure.
Did it get a DVD release in recent years or anything?
Yes, it did, yeah.
Ooh, maybe one to look out for.
In fact, it came out over here, apparently.
I'm going to have to check scroll eBay for that one. If it's...
Yeah, check it out. Apparently, the last four episodes never got an official DVD release in America.
Too violent, no doubt.
Or nobody bought enough of the first two volumes.
True.
Okay, moving on. Also in 1986, this is a show I know Gary's seen, so I think he's brought it up before. Gem and the Holograms.
Truly outrageous.
Was that a tagline from the show, I presume?
Yeah, from the opening.
I hope so. it is pretty
catchy.
Yeah,
seen a fair bit of Gem and the Holograms, because, again, it was a huge thing for my sister. Hasbro marketed the hell out of this thing, because they basically would bring out dolls, and the dolls would have not. It was like kind of like Barbie, but better, because the dolls had glow up earrings, which was kind of cool. Because I remember I had Thundercats that had glow up eyes. It was kind of the same sort of thing. But also the dolls would come with tapes, which would basically have the Gem and the Holograms band and the songs from the TV show. So it was kind of a good marketing ploy. And I think at the time it came out, the Gem and the Holograms, like, dolls actually outsold Barbie. And bearing in mind, Barbie was in her heyday in the 80s. That's quite a feat. But the cartoon was very, very cheesy. Lots of cheesy, like, song numbers in it. And it was basically about Gem and her band, the Holograms, and the record label, and how people were constantly trying to, I don't know, do them out of business or whatever, or get a rival band to beat them in the charts. So... I imagine Simon Cowell could have made a great cameo as a villain.
Oh, Jem looks pretty hot as well as characters go. I like the look of Jem. So yeah.
Yeah, my main memory of this is switching Whack-A-Day off when it came on when I was a kid.
Right.
You didn't at least sit through the intro and start boogieing?
No, I did not care for the tunes of Jem and all the Holograms. So were there villains in it? Was there like a villain?
There was a villain. There was a villain band called the Misfits, who you'll see in the intro, and they just look like they're nothing like the actual band, the Misfits. They're just basically three chicks with different color hairs. But yeah, you basically you'd have like villainous. The villains would usually be either some sort of record exec trying to like screw the Gem and the Holograms out of their recording contract, or steal them away from the record label they're on. Or it'd be a rival band that wants to somehow trash the Gem concert and take over it and perform. So it's kind of...
It sounds like it would make an awesome live-action drama.
Well, except, of course, that it's kind of ripping off Josie and the Pussycats to begin with.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure they've done stuff like that already.
Yeah, but they did the Josie and the Pussycats film, didn't they? So
yeah, end up being really cheesy like School of Rock.
I quite like School of Rock.
I've never seen it, but I really want to because it's...
I wasn't a huge fan of it, if I'm honest.
Ah, what's the director called?
It's the guy who's in it as well as the guy who takes... Oh, no, it's not in it. He wrote it. No, Linklater.
Is it Linklater? Yes.
Yeah, Linklater directed it. It's the writers in it.
Right. I do want to see that.
What I did watch from 1986, though, which wasn't Hasbro this time, it was King Feature Syndicate working with Marvel, and that was Defenders of the Earth.
Defenders.
Epic.
Which was three newspaper strips, Flash Gordon, Phantom, and, oh god, what's the wizard's
Mandrake.
Name? Mandrake.
Mandrake.
teaming up to fight Ming the Merciless.
Who was your favourite? Big question.
I'm trying to think. It's been a while. I quite like Mandrake.
I like probably, Phantom, though.
Probably just because of his bit of the song.
Oh, the intro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because while well, the theme tune sort of broke it down into like three separate, four separate theme tunes for each of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Where they, but yeah. Was it Lothar, the guy? Yeah, he's from Mandrake as well, but they kind of updated him to make him more of his own character for this.
Right.
In terms of a bit of equality.
Phantom's Phantom, though. Phantom's Billy Zane, after all.
I've never seen that.
Oh.
Wait, why is Billy Zane Phantom?
He was in the live-action Phantom film.
I didn't even know they did one.
Oh, they
really?
Did.
Oh, goodness.
When did that come out?
It's, in the 90s, it's kind of like the trilogy of... sort of, you could put together another three-part movie night if you wanted. We've had our ants night.
Yeah.
Put together Phantom, The Rocketeer, and The Shadow, couldn't you? That would
yes.
be good.
I do like The Shadow.
Kind of
I never saw The Shadow. I saw The Rocketeer, though. That was pretty dire.
I quite like The Rocketeer. I like Shadow as well. I'd say Phantom's the worst of the bunch, if anything.
Is Catherine Zeta-Jones in The Phantom?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the cast list now. She is. Anyone else worth mentioning? Obviously, Billy Zane is. Oh, it's all right. It's not great by any means, but it's entertaining.
1996 stars Billy Zane, Christy Swanson, Buffy.
Yeah, the original Buffy.
Treat Williams.
Oh, shit. And Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yes, before she was more famous.
That was probably part of her fame, the success of the...
Possibly despite...
I bet it must have been such a flop, because obviously I was young at the time, but I bet it was such a flop of a film.
Oh, it was. It had the amazing tagline, Slam Evil.
Nice. Sounds like a wrestling film.
I do like The Shadow of it.
Hulk Hogan should have nicked that for No Holds Barred.
I've only seen, of those three that we've just mentioned, I've only seen The Rocketeer. I've not seen The Shadow or The Phantom.
Oh, The Shadow is entertaining. It's good.
Yeah, it's Alec Baldwin in The Shadow, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So did Lothar or Mandrake get their own films?
I'd love to see a Mandrake film.
I do wonder.
Yes, Mandrake 2010.
I think that's something else. That's
it's going to be about a snake. I thought The Defenders, it has to be said, had a really cool intro. I like the whole kind of, the way it would talk about each of the characters and their powers. That was
quite.
It was almost like once the episode started, you knew kind of what each one was capable of to a degree.
They did unfortunately have kid sidekicks. Each character had their own kid sidekick, didn't they? Mandrake the Magician, 1939.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
It's going back
hell.
A few years.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that how old the character is then? The comics.
Oh, yeah, he goes... Yeah, all the characters go back, way back, I think to the 30s, maybe earlier.
Blimey, I did not know that.
Yeah, Mandrake.
I thought Flash Gordon was a newer thing.
Oh, no. Flash Gordon goes way, way back. There was serials of that as well.
Masters of magic, spells and illusion, enemies crumble in fear and confusion. Mandrake. That was his little segment.
I remember as kids, I can't remember any of them off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure as kids, we used to make up our own little intros that basically fitted the tune to Defenders of the Earth, but for random different characters. So we'd like throw people in there and stuff, like making up one for the Hulk.
Can you remember that one?
I can't remember what they were. It was very cheesy.
Oh, do an ad lib to Incredible Hulk. Go on.
No. I'll pass.
Yeah, Flash Gordon dates back to 1934, a comic strip originally drawn by Alex Raymond.
Wow.
Phantom goes back to... I hear the 1980 version of Flash Gordon, the live-action one, looks really good on Blu-ray.
Really?
Well, it should do, because it's very brightly coloured, isn't it?
Mm.
Phantom. There is a lot of phantoms in the world. Comic strip, yeah. There we go. He goes back to 1936. And...
Old
school. Mandrake the Magician goes back to 1934. Yeah, so they are pretty all old school. I think all the kid characters are much newer. But your four main leads go way back.
Love the look of that Phantom. I think he's such a awesome looking character.
Did you like the was it Phantom 2040? That was in the future with Peter Chung character designs.
No idea what it is. That thing. Oh, I never watched that.
I liked that when I was I was probably a teenager then. Yeah, I did like that, because I liked Aeon Flux, and so I was like, ooh, Peter Chung character designs, I'll watch this.
The Ghost Who Walks, that's the Phantom.
The one bit of design I really liked on Defenders of the Earth, I think, were the rock men that Ming had as soldiers, that they could merrily destroy because they were made of rocks. Because that was, it's obviously, you go back to last episode with Wolverine appearing in them. Spider-Man has amazing friends. He doesn't get to use it. He didn't get to use his claws against anybody. He just got to use them as skewers to make a kebab. basically, so that's the thing of these kids' cartoons. You can't really show people getting killed, but rock men getting blown apart into tiny, smaller pieces of rock. Yeah, that's perfectly okay. So, and I did quite like the design of them because they were like sort of inverted triangles with big rocky limbs hanging off them. I think the most. So, are you big fans of the Flash Gordon 1980 film with Brian Blessed yelling all over it and Max von Sydow chewing the scenery?
I watched that film.
Used to scare the hell out of me. Specifically, the bit where Flash and what was the other character? Was it played? It was played by Timothy Dalton, I think.
Yeah.
And they have that fight on the spiky pit that with the spikes coming out. Because I was convinced every time I watched it, even though I'd watched it so many times, I was convinced somehow that I would watch it one time and one of them would get spiked. Yeah, one of them would fall over and get spiked. That used to scare the hell out of me. And that weird thing they had to put their hands in and try not to get stung by or something.
Oh yeah, between that and the insect crawling, the ear insect in Wrath of Khan. Yeah, that was was nightmare fuel when I was a little kid.
Yeah. I hated that stuff.
I think Flash Gordon might have been the first film I saw in the cinema when I was really... hyped for it because they were... I think it wasn't like free gifts, but Weetabix sort of had cut out things to do with it on the lead up to the film, and I think I was really excited to see it when it came out. So it was either that or Mary Poppins, but one of those two was the first film I saw. I definitely prefer Flash Gordon to Mary Poppins.
Oh, I do like Mary Poppins.
Yeah, I think I prefer it now, but I think it's very long when you're a kid.
Yeah, it's actually very long.
You'd see clips of it on, like, Disney Time, when that used to be on when BBC used to just give over half an hour of holiday time to advertising Disney things for them. You'd see clips of it, and that would get you excited as a kid, and then you actually have to go and sit through the entire film. You're like... Oh, blimey, not all of it's like... Because they normally show you like the live-action bits where they're interacting with cartoons.
Yeah, so then and everything when you're a kid, else.
Yeah. You know, why is it all like the penguins serving them as waiters? why is this all anti-capitalist? Right, moving on from Defenders of the Earth to Glow Friends. I haven't seen this, but my little brother did have one of the toys.
Yeah, I remember friends at school having the toys. They were like basically giant glowworms. I think you had ones that plugged into the mains or something. They were like nightlights, is that right?
Yeah.
That was their whole
I think I remember seeing...
They cashed in on kids' fear of the dark because you could basically get one, plug it in, and it would be your little glow friend that would help you fall asleep because it would scare away the boogeyman.
Oh, I'm just looking at the Wikipedia page for glow friends. Goodness me, this is like...
The villains.
I'm just looking at the sheer number of glow friends there are.
How many is there?
There was loads.
There's too many for me to count. It's like My Little Pony Care Bear style.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. You could just change one of the colours of the eyes of one of them and it'd be a completely new character. I didn't really see the cartoon. I remember I had VHS videos of stuff that advertised the cartoon, but I didn't ever actually watch it. I don't think it got TV. I think it was just a VHS release.
I'm reading here it was a segment on My Little Pony and Friends.
Oh,
so
okay,
it was like 26 segments rather than
an actual show in its own right.
Yeah.
But the toys were hugely popular. I think the classic one that everyone had was the weird like one that was like just a green kind of caterpillar with the little head.
Ah, yes, I seem to remember seeing that one myself, yeah.
Okay, yeah, this My Little Pony and Friends brings us back to our talk about, when we were talking about Muppet Babies and having sort of something kids cartoons. Apparently one of the other shows in this My Little Pony and Friends was Potato Head Kids.
Yeah, that was a cartoon as well. I remember seeing the trailer for that.
Was that to do with the potato heads as in...
Yes.
The Toy Mr. Friends?
Potato Head.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Potato Head Kids was an outgrowth of the Mr. Potato Head character franchise. Mr. Potato Head now played an adult figure in the lives of the title kids. A varied bunch of anthropomorphic potatoes with different personalities. Oh, hang on.
What have you found?
I'm just wondering whether there's a keyword potato where you can find the top 10 potato films on IMDb.
Why not? Yeah, I think the main character from the Glow Friends was the glow worm, but the standard glow worm. I used to know loads of friends at school, mostly female, that had them. I'm pretty sure I knew male friends that had them as well, tragically. Mm. Not something I was ever into. I was never scared of the dark.
No.
What are you on about? Of course I was never scared of the dark.
The dark never bothered me, to be honest. Well, I was reading about the premise of this Glow Friends. The villains were moles, and obviously they had bad sight, short-sightedness, and they were going to enslave the Glow Friends to power their lanterns. pretty sinister stuff, I think. So
that must be surely the only time moles have been cast as villains.
Because
they're not normally an animal you associate with evil.
No, I'm trying to think. Is there a mole villain in Fantastic Mr. Fox? No, there's not. There's not. At least I don't think so.
No, I don't know. Apparently, I see these moles come from Molesylvania. Or something like that. No, sorry, yeah, not quite that, but something along those lines.
Vampire moles.
Very odd. Very odd indeed. Okay, moving on from glowworms.
Oh, do you not find your potato list?
No, there's no keyword for potato under potato.
Oh, tragic.
It only has plot keywords, Mr. Potato Head and based on toy.
No.
And obviously the top Mr. Potato Head films.
Toy Story.
Yeah. That is correct.
And what's next? Transformers the movie, which we've covered last episode.
Yeah,
listen to this, wanting that, you're not going to hear it.
Same year was My Little Pony the movie, which we covered My Little Pony as well. 87, they did Blondie and Dagwood. I can't remember if this was a special or a series. That's obviously another classic newspaper strip from American papers, but I don't know if Blondie's really that familiar over here in the UK. I mean, I know about it because I'm a horrendous nerd.
Self-proclaimed.
But, here we go. Animated TV cartoon special in 1987. With a second one in 1989. Any good?
It's quite amusing. I kind of like that style of humour. Kind of... I wouldn't know how to classify it as something, but it's... It's not hilariously funny, but it's cheesy. It's very cheesy, but it's amusing. Nothing more.
I shall pop a link up to that on the show notes. And in 1989, there was a pilot for Pride of the X-Men, which was the last of the sort of big Marvel projects in the 80s, which was basically a pilot for an X-Men cartoon. Which got in a video release eventually. And I remember there being a lot of excitement for this when it came up, because obviously X-Men was the biggest comic at the time. And nothing really came of it. I don't know whether that's because in 1989 Marvel got bought out and then basically stripped of all its value by their new owners and driven bankrupt deliberately during the 90s. That may be the reason why. But basically after this point, Marvel Productions tended to be a lot cheaper if they were doing anything at all. Had the same guy doing the Wolverine accent from The Amazing Spider-Man. Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, yeah.
Oh, good.
I don't know what the accent was like there, whether it was full-on Australian or it may have just been Cockney. By the time it came out on video over here, I didn't have any interest in actually watching it anymore.
Mm-hmm. I was reading that it possibly didn't do well because it was too camp.
Ah,
okay. The show. But the animation was very well received, apparently. Like, it was, like, well animated for its time. Apparently so. That's what I've heard. And the intro looks pretty good, because there's an intro on YouTube for it. And it looks quite decent.
Yeah, I shall dig that up and put it
It's old school look. Well, my favourite kind of looking Cyclops, where he's got the... It's like a full suit, where his hair's covered up.
Yeah, that's how he looked in the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends as well.
Yeah, now, I like that Cyclops.
Wolverine is in his, like, brown and yellow outfit, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
He hasn't got the blue yet.
No, he's in his...
Well, no, he started with the blue.
And then did he?
Yeah, he started with the blue.
Oh, my bad.
Then moved to the tan colours.
I prefer the old school. But, yeah.
And then, so it's all quiet on using Japanese studios until 1994... where they had Spider-Man, which was running alongside, I think, the X-Men cartoon they'd already launched.
Mm-hmm. Both were amazing.
I don't know about amazing. They did cross over at some points. But this Spider-Man was being animated in part by TMS, I believe, who had also been doing stuff for the Batman animated series.
Which was fantastic. That's better than Spider-Man and X-Men, in all fairness. But
yes, it is. Yeah, I think. it's kind of. So, what do you think about this Spider-Man cartoon? I mean, I loved it at the time, but going back to it now,
see, I've got fond memories. But as you say, going back to it now could be a very different story.
They've been showing it on. Well, they were showing it on ITV on Saturday and Sunday mornings, I think.
Right, you're probably not out of bed.
Quite possibly not. And it wasn't as bad as I was expecting. Some of the things I kind of find screwy at the time, I still find kind of screwy. So you've got the Punisher shows up, but doesn't punish anybody, because obviously they can't have him shooting people with real bullets.
No.
Yeah, and you had, Morbius was a vampire, but he didn't drink blood, he drained plasma, as they called it.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yeah.
That was an irk. I remember that being a big irk of me and friends at school. We still liked it, but that just annoyed us.
And Venom
Morbius seemed to be in it a hell of a lot.
Yeah, I think it was. And when Venom showed up, it kind of looked odd. And trying to do the shading of the sort of all black body didn't really work in keeping it moving. And of course, the oddest thing is that you've got Hobgoblin shows up before the Green Goblin, which. Isn't the case in the comics, and obviously they had to get a bit screwy to get around to that.
See, why would they do that? Why would they just do it? Why not?
Because, this is my theory. I imagine at the time there wasn't a Green Goblin in the comics. There was a Hobgoblin in the comics. So I think their aim was to try and make the cartoons look as similar as possible to the comics.
To the time,
that were coming out at the time, which is the same with the X-Men. So while they'd revisit old X-Men storylines in that show and old Spider-Man storylines in this show, they tended to try and make the look of it seem as close as possible to what was going on in the comics at the time.
Right.
Even though I think they did eventually use the Green Goblin storyline and bring him in. So that was the old bit of continuity. And this got bounced around the houses until, so I think it went to Saban for a while, because I think they were involved in producing it, and then Disney bought it off Saban, and then Disney ended up buying Marvel anyway, so I think Disney have quite safely ended up with all the Marvel stuff back under their control.
Lucky them.
Yes, which means I think like the live-action Japanese Spider-Man, I think they've got a load of these episodes on the Marvel site, or at least did have at some point.
But yeah. I'd like to rewatch some of that actually and see if it is just stand up to how it used to be.
Yeah, I think it stands up better than some of the 80s shows of my youth stand up today. It's no Thundercats in terms of going, well, this is a really great opening sequence. Oh, hang on, the rest of this show looks like ass. though I do appear to be the only person on the internet who likes Snarf and the Thundercats.
But, yeah, because I certainly don't. I don't hate them, but I certainly don't like them. By no means.
I think the other thing though is Spider-Man doesn't really have that problem of any particularly annoying characters showing up.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's anything to add, Gary?
No, not really. I kind of, as you guys said, watched the Spider-Man cartoon as a kid, but kind of I look at it now and it's a bit, it's not something I'd probably sit and watch anymore because all the good stuff that I would be interested in is probably not going to be in the cartoon. Like the whole kind of, when they did the whole saga of Venom and Carnage.
Oh, that's in the cartoon.
Is it?
Oh, yes.
But I thought they had to tone it down because they couldn't have Carnage just killing people in the street randomly.
Oh, yeah, of course they did that, but yeah. I think that one plays out fairly like the comic, if I remember correctly.
Okay, that wouldn't be too bad. I never saw it. I remember, like, obviously you'd see Venom in the intro, and I think I saw a couple of episodes with Venom in it, but I don't ever remember seeing Carnage in the cartoon.
I don't think even Captain America shows up in the same way he does in the comic. Unless I'm completely losing my mind, which is entirely possible. Episode 38 was Carnage.
Ah.
How many episodes did it go on for?
65.
God.
Wow.
I don't remember ever seeing any finales or anything. I don't know how it ended, if it ended, what it ended.
Yeah, that's
with.
What I mean. I don't think I ever saw any major ending arcs, because I'd see episodes where he'd, like, say, beat Shocker or Doc Ock, and then later on they'd be, you know, running around, running amok again.
Was it Madame Web? No.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, Madame Web.
Yeah, she showed up in it as well. Yeah, because it used to have, like, ongoing stories throughout the season, as well as sort of multi-part stories. But yeah, I'm not sure I've seen many of the later episodes looking at the titles, because apparently there's a Secret Wars three-part story, which I definitely didn't see.
Oh, right. No.
I saw the, actually thinking about it, I did see the Captain America one, because I remember there was, like, it was Spider-Man and it was the original Avengers, and they're obviously all old people now because they didn't get frozen in time. And they thaw out Captain America, and I think they accidentally thaw out the Red Skull.
Oh, yeah, that looks like it's... Time. Yeah, I think that's something called the Six Forgotten Warriors. That's
the one. Is that the same series, or is it different?
Yeah, that's from the last series where it's a five-part story.
Yeah, I actually watched that. That actually wasn't too bad. Except for the Six Forgotten Warriors, when you looked at what their abilities were, they were quite pale compared to, like, you know, the modern-day comic books. Like, I think the woman that was in their team, her only ability was that she could fly. It's kind of like big deal. But that was kind of cool. It was sort of like a Captain America retelling, because they thaw him out, and that was quite cool.
Good, good. And then it all sort of...
Did they thaw him out? You like what I did there?
I like that.
Oh, good, good.
Okay, talking of Thor, Marvel don't seem to use any Japanese studios again until 2009, when they, as part of their direct-to-video films they've been releasing, most of which have been pretty awful up to this point. Then they released Hulk Versus in 2009, which is animated by Madhouse, which was a double pack of stories, Hulk Versus Wolverine and Hulk Versus Thor. And I've got a link to a trailer, which I think I'd link to you guys. This one has had loads of good reviews. I think this was the point where people said, oh, finally they've released a good direct-to-video movie, which sort of hold ups against the Warner Brothers ones, which tend to be a lot better. Then in 2010, they carried on their relationship with Madhouse, and they started doing four anime series, which were going to broadcast in Japan first, and then later in America. The first one is Iron Man, which was directed by... I can't remember. Yuzo Sato, I think. The guy's name, the guy who directed Akagi and Kaji. It's very, very wordy.
Mm, snippets.
Yeah, so I'm sort of holding off watching most of these until actually they've been properly dubbed, because I think they might actually come across better dubbed than they are in Japanese. It might sort of put a bit of polish onto the script rather than reading sort of crappy fan translations of what they're saying in Japanese. Because the original stories apparently were written by the British comics writer Warren Ellis, and then adapted by Japanese writers, and then presumably will be adapted back again by some American script writer. Then after they followed up Iron Man with Wolverine having made a guest appearance in Iron Man, which is, I think the Wolverine one is the one so far which has been closest to just straight out adapting comics. So I think it starts with like an adaptation of the Claremont Frank Miller miniseries, and then moves on with, I think, Omega Red shows up in some of the later episodes. And that's been followed by the one which is currently running, which is X-Men, which you were getting annoyed at last episode.
I haven't watched any more of it at the moment, so I can't really comment on it, but nah, we'll see what happens with that one. I'm still up in the air, well, not up in the air about it, just indecisive.
Yeah, and X-Men is sort of vaguely based on bits of the Josh Whedon Astonishing X-Men, bits of Grant Morrison's New X-Men run, and then a few bits of old Chris Claremont comics. They all sort of mix together. And then just announced this week is Blade, which is following, and they've announced the staff for that, and that's being directed by, I'll just find the guy's name if I can. It's the guy who directed Cheese Sweet Home, the show about the cute little kitten.
Quite ironic. But
he has done other stuff. He also did some episodes of Shigurai, the extremely violent swordsman show. So that may pay off in Blade. Yeah, I can't find his name at the moment. But yeah, so that's the last one to come out. And Blade hasn't showed up in the X-Men yet, so I don't know whether they're going to directly continue on, or there'll just be some sort of strange leap. I can see how they might tie in with the X-Men story, because they've got people who are experimenting with mutants, so in theory they might start experimenting with vampires next, maybe.
Possibly,
or turning mutants into vampires.
Vampiric mutants.
Well, either way, I imagine something causes Blade to go to Japan.
Maybe he just needs a new sword.
Quite possibly, yes.
So yeah, that's Marvel.
That's Marvel for you.
Wrapped up.
Rightio. Anything you want to plug, Gary?
No, not really.
Rokey dokey. Anything you want to plug, Anthony?
Just you can follow me on Twitter, because I would like more followers. That says Ant. Oh, hold on, let me think. I can't even think what it is. Is it Gordon? No, yeah, sorry. That is at Ant Askew, and that's A-S-K-E-W. And that's it at the minute, I think. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at awesome_engine. You can find the website at awesome-engine.com, where you shall find this podcast. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also befriend us on Facebook, where we are Dynamite in the Brain.
No escape.
There's no escape. And also, I have had confirmed that I shall be running 3 events at IACON this coming August. I shall be running Mad Stravaganza 5.
That needs plugging.
I shall be running a thing which is currently called Nice German, which is a panel about pro wrestling and anime and manga.
Yeah, that gets a plug from me then.
And finally, I shall also be doing a panel about Dynamic Productions. So Go Nagai shows and manga and related things from 1968 to 1976.
You're going to have a lot of work ahead of you to get 3 panels out. Not that I'm saying you're not capable of doing it, because I'm sure you are, but that's a lot of stuff to be doing.
Ah, Jesus. Easy. It's only an hour for each of those, and then 2 hours for the Mad Stravaganza.
Aye.
Mad Stravaganza will be the one which will take the longest in terms of amount of time, not amount of work, but just in terms of.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, IACON will be.
It is August 19th, isn't it?
Or is it the weekend ahead of? Maybe the week. Oh no, I think you're right. I think you're right. Yeah.
Let's give the right facts out.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Why not?
Are you going to Iacon, Gary?
I haven't regged yet. I need to.
Oh,
I'm skint at the moment. Bought new glasses. Cost a fortune.
Oh, God.
What do you need glasses for, Gary?
To watch the dodgy subtitles on rubbish anime.
Yes, Warwick Arts Centre, 19th to the 21st of August, 2011. You can find that at iacon.org.uk. There are still places left.
Yeah, so we'll get registering.
Leave space for me. Oh, and you can follow me on at Gary Hedges, all one word.
Which you don't use enough, Gary.
I do. I use Twitter a reasonable amount. I'm on Facebook, though, so it's kind of...
Well,
get in the habit of doing more tweets and less Facebook status updates.
You can get, Twitter to update your Facebook for you.
You can
talk to each other. Righto, that's another episode of Dynamite in the Brain Wrapped.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.